When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny taking you up to 6:30 on the Fan. Tomorrow we'll be out and about for our Friday field trip. We're going to be at the Crystal City Sports Pub from 2 to 6:30.
As Washington continues to build the foundations of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. So the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condor and Morad, can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them the Grant and Danny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Danny Cannell joins us courtesy of BetOnline. Check out BetOnline for updated college football playoff, bowl game, and 2025 opening Heisman lines. That's right. We already got the Heisman lines out for next football season. Danny, the time has finally come. Playoff football is just 2 days away collegiately. We can't wait. How are you?
I am with you guys, fired up. This is something I've been, you know, campaigning for, pounding the table for, expanded playoff. And the best part about it, we're going to get some cold weather games on college campuses. I cannot wait to watch. I think it's going to be a spectacle. I'm so fired up for these games.
Let's start first things first here, Danny. Who wins the Battle of Indiana, Notre Dame and Indiana, at 8 o'clock tomorrow night?
So I actually like Indiana, not only to cover, but to actually win the game outright. Notre Dame has been, and Notre Dame fans are not happy with me because of it, but I look at Notre Dame, and I don't think they have played anybody. I mean, not since they played Texas A&M the first game of the season, who had a different quarterback, and that game was ugly. They did win it, but then they lost to Northern Illinois, and then against a schedule that has been very lackluster, they dominated a lot of those teams, but they did struggle with USC somewhat, and there were two pick sixes at the end of the USC game, or else that game is much closer, and USC was a team that's, you know, 6-6. So it's not exactly the kind of confidence builder you want going into this. And I know that Indiana lost on the road to Ohio State, but I thought that game, their defense actually stood up pretty well. I think they're going to be able to turn Notre Dame into a one-dimensional team. And that unfortunately doesn't bode well because Riley Leonard, their quarterback, has not shown the capability to put the team on his back through the air. That's one of the reasons Northern Illinois beat Notre Dame. So I actually have Indiana beating their in-state rival. The little brother beats big brother in South Bend.
Wow, Notre Dame 7-point favorite. That's the 10-7 matchup. You got the 10 advancing Indiana to take on the 2-seed Georgia. Winner of that game gets the Dogs coming up on New Year's Day. All right, let's move up the bracket then to the 6 and the 11. That's the first game on Saturday afternoon at noon, part of a triple header in the college football playoff. SMU, an 11 seed. Penn State, a 6 seed. Nittany Lions favored, I believe, by 8.5. The winner gets Boise State on New Year's Eve. Who do you like?
So I actually like Penn State in this one. I'm a little bit worried about SMU. They've been a great story all season long. You know, they get to the ACC championship game in their first year in the ACC, but they did get pushed around a little bit by Clemson. Now, they made it respectable and came back after trailing much of the game. But I think this is going to be a physical battle for them, not to mention the fact a team from Texas, from Dallas, traveling to a very cold Happy Valley. But I think what it comes down to is Penn State's defense will be able to control Kevin Jennings, who's really a dynamic quarterback. But I think Abdul Carter and company on the defensive side of the ball will be able to contain them. And probably the biggest mismatch and something that concerns me the most for SMU is trying to contain Penn State's offense, specifically Nick Singleton and Katron Allen, the two-headed monster they have at running back, who did, by the way, both of them rushed for over 100 yards versus Oregon. They were able to put up a bunch of points versus Oregon. And I know they lost the game, but I think Oregon is significantly better than SMU. I think this is one where SMU is a little bit overwhelmed by a team that has been really good quietly under the radar. Yes, I know they lost to Ohio State, and they lost to Oregon, but I still think this team is clearly more talented than SMU, so I actually would lay them with Penn State.
So, Danny, I feel like Penn State's got a great shot to then win their next matchup, too, and this may be disrespectful to Boise State, but I'd pick Penn State in that tilt if they do get by SMU. What are your thoughts?
I totally agree with you. I do have Penn State advancing all the way to the semis. And then I was kind of torn because when they play Georgia, like I kind of want to see what Georgia looks like without Carson Beck potentially. Like we don't even know if he's playing or not. What does the backup look like? But I think Penn State could advance all the way to the finals. Like a lot of it comes on Drew Aller, who I think has been good this year. He hasn't been great, but he made some plays in the Big Ten Championship that could be real confidence boosters for him. But, like, I get with it, and I'm on the same page with it. Boise State, it's been a great year for them, and I have been a champion of the group of five teams. Like, I'm glad that they have a seat at the table. What I don't love is them having a seat at the head of the table with a first-round bye. I think it's atrocious. I would be livid if I'm a commissioner of the ACC or the Big 12, which both of them, I'm sure, have voiced their displeasure. It is a different level. Like, it is called group of five because they have lesser talent, lesser resources, less money. And I know they can beat potentially one of these teams, but their schedule truly is a different animal than anybody else that plays in the Power Four level. So I think it's pretty egregious that they got a first round bye. And I do think Penn State is able to control them. Like Penn State will be another double digit favorite against Boise State. Now, could Ashton Gentry shock the world? He almost did against Oregon, potentially. But I think Penn State will be too much for Boise State. So I'm with you. I do have Penn State advancing through the semis for sure.
Danny Cannell joining us courtesy of Bet Online. You can check out the updated college football playoff bowl game in 2025 opening Heisman Trophy lines. All right, let's keep going with the playoff bracket. So we've talked about the potential matchups in the Sugar Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl. Oregon's going to be playing in the Rose Bowl, and that game's going to be played on New Year's Day. They're going to get the winner of Tennessee, Ohio State, so we could start there. I think a lot of people are kind of dreaming on the Ohio State-Oregon matchup as an 8-1. Are we going to get that?
I think so. I did pick Ohio State, and I'm laying it. They're a touchdown favorite. I just feel like maybe it's Michigan. You know, like maybe that's their kryptonite. It's a mind game with Ohio State, you know, losing four times in a row. I hated the way that Ryan Day approached that game. Like, he made it even more stressful than we already all knew it was going to be when he compared losing to Michigan like losing his father. You know, I mean, I just like, really, like, that's where you're going to go with it? I thought they played up tight. I think now they can have more of an us-against-the-world atmosphere, and it might be us against our own fan base because Ohio State fans are so, you know, upset and they're calling for Ryan Day to be fired. But
do you think he should be, by the way, if they lose?
No, if they lose, yes, because it might just be too toxic. Like, right? I mean, I think it's unfair. Like, his record against everybody else has been awful. But at some point, you do have to look at the bigger picture, like of where you've lost your fan base and they're starting to boo you. But I would say this: tell me who they're going to get. Like, and if they can get Mike Vrabel, there's a lot of rumblings about that. Of course, he might go take an NFL job. So then, like, if you don't get Mike Vrabel, then who's the upgrade? Because if it's Mike Vrabel, I'll say win or lose, like anything short of the national championship, I'd move on to that. I think he's a better fit. I think he played there. He brings the physicality. I think he'd be a great brand. But like, if you don't have that lined up, which direction are you going to go? And you better have somebody that is uniquely qualified to handle that position because it's one of the most pressure-packed positions, or else you'll find yourself in a lot worse situation than just losing to Michigan. Like, you could be 9-3 or 8-4. And then all of a sudden, you're like, it's mayhem. So I think it depends on who they have. But if they lose this game, I think they will probably be looking at some of those options.
Danny Cannell with us here on Grant and Danny on The Fan. So we've already kind of referenced Boise State, so the answer might be them here, Danny. But which of the top four seeds with byes are most likely to get upset, in your opinion?
I think it's Boise State, but I think it's Boise State, clearly. I mentioned their weakness, who they play against. Arizona State, I love them. I love the story of Kenny Dillingham, who grew up there in Phoenix, went to Arizona State, and he's turned around this program where their win total was 4.5 to enter the season, and here they are as Big 12 champs. I think they could put up a challenge for whoever they face, but ultimately, this is a game of like physicality and depth. And I just feel like either Texas or Clemson really matches up well. Now, I have Clemson actually upsetting Texas. And again, I'm trying to find upsets because I think there will be them. In my luck, it'll probably be the wrong two. Like, it could be the total opposite side. And this is one of the, this is the biggest point spread in the opening round. But I love what Clemson's sort of playing with house money. And Dabo Swinney really thrives in that us against the world atmosphere. Like, nobody believes in us. Y'all couldn't say we couldn't win without the transfer portal. Like, I can hear him saying that after the game. And they actually, a team that everybody wanted to see in the playoffs, South Carolina, they actually played them really well. And had it not been for a tip ball interception at the end of that game, they probably win that game. Then they think their season is over, but they still get the opportunity to play now, and they beat SMU, again, another good team. I think they could be in a loose atmosphere like, hey, we got it's house money at this point. I think they could go into a stressful environment against Texas, who really hasn't beaten anybody good all season long. Their best games, that the best opponent they faced was Georgia twice, and they came up short both times. So I'm not completely sold on Texas, even though they are the odds-on favorite to win the national championship. And it's most likely because of that defense. I just think Clemson could potentially pull off that upset.
The winner of that game, let's say it's Texas advancing, takes on Arizona State in the 4-5 in the Peach Bowl. That Arizona State team's a lot of fun. I had not watched much of them till the very end of the season, but I'm obsessed with Cam Scataboo like everybody else is. 1,560 yards and 19 touchdowns. Oh. What kind of pro prospect is the big running back?
Oh, I could see him having a long career, like an Austin Eckler type, because he does catch the ball a lot. He's their second leading receiver, as well as their top rusher. Like, he is a gadget guy that you can use in a lot of different ways. And I don't know if you've seen any videos of him, like, talking in the locker room. Like, he truly is, like, that guy that stands up at halftime and, like, calls out his teammates, put the team on his back. And he really is sort of that infectious personality. He's a great worker. And what he might lack in 40 speed or, you know, the type of chiseled body that you want to see at the combine, he absolutely makes up for in production. So I think he could have a really nice NFL career. Given the right system and given an opportunity, I think he could really excel. And I love him. He's one of my favorite players as well. And also Sam Levitt, their quarterback, has quietly had a really strong season. And he's pretty mobile, so he could provide some problems to either the Clemson or Texas. I think that could be a tricky out. Like, I'll like them against the number because they're probably going to be a double-digit dog. I just don't know how they could hold up on the defensive side of the ball versus either Texas or Clemson.
So, Danny, give me a couple players that you're sort of looking at here that you almost say, I hope their team wins because I just want to see more of them on like that big stage and let America get introduced to them. Give me a couple of guys that you've got circled.
So, I would look at... I mean, I just gave you Sam Levitt, Cam Scataboo, Cade Klubnik for Clemson, and that's one of the reasons I'm picking him. He's one of the early favorites next year for Heisman. You talk about a way to kick off your 2025 Heisman campaign. He all of a sudden, you know, he looked awful against Georgia in week one. He's been spectacular. So, like, keep an eye on him. I think he could potentially – and, by the way, he won the state championship in Texas on that field at DK Royal Stadium out in Texas, so he's very comfortable there. Abdul Carter, an edge rusher for Penn State, is somebody that's going to be a top 10 draft pick. Keep an eye out for him. SMU's quarterback is going to be, he's going to be trying to chase him down. Kevin Jennings, another guy who's a top 10 potential next year Heisman finalist. He's a really dynamic dual threat quarterback. He's somebody to keep an eye on. Jeremiah Smith, I'm sure you guys are familiar with him. Ohio State stud freshman wide receiver. I'd like to see Ohio State get him more involved. And then Dylan Sampson, Tennessee's running back. He's probably the best running back in the SEC. He is phenomenal. And if Michigan was able to run and get Khalil Mullings 100 yards, watch out, because that could be a massive headache for Ohio State. If they can't stop Dylan Sampson, they're going to lose the game. So a couple players there to watch out for from this weekend that are sort of not quarterbacks. They're just guys that you'll be hearing their names a lot this weekend, being called, and how they play probably determines how far their team goes.
Danny Cannell with Grant and Danny here on The Fan. He was just talking about the 2025 Heisman Trophy market. It's available on Bet Online now. I'm looking at it. Arch Manning 7-1 is the favorite. Garrett Nussmeier, who I love at LSU, is, I think, second on that list as well at this point at 9-1. Before we let you go, I wanted to sneak in a question about next year's playoff, which is that the Ivy League football teams are going to have a shot to play for the biggest FCF stage here. They'll be a part of the 2025 playoff if they can earn it. I mean, number one, how does that change things? What do you think about that? And then also, what tweaks would you make moving forward that you've already seen as problematic?
So I love the fact that the Ivy League is going to get an opportunity. Like, it never really made sense for me why their season kind of ended after the Ivy League, you know, championships, and why they, you know, crowned their own champion. Why not let them play? So I love that from an access standpoint. And then the 12-team playoff, which is only going to be around one more year. Like, this is a two-year experiment. It will get tweaked. And I think seeding, it's probably, I'm sure you guys have talked about it, seeding is problematic. Like, it's messed up that Boise State is a 3 seed and gets a bye. Like, I have been a Group of Five proponent. Get them in the playoff. I just can't stand that they actually get this massive advantage of having a first-round bye when their schedule is nowhere close to a lot of these other teams. So I actually think we'll probably get 14, possibly 16 teams in another year, which I am all for it. We've already seen, like, the success of this season, how many teams it brought into the conversation in November, which I love. So I think you'll see expansion, and I think you'll see a better seeding system so that it's more properly kind of rated and ranked, the way that Oregon, the number one seed, doesn't have one of the tougher paths, and Boise State, one of the weaker teams power rating-wise, actually has a significant advantage. They'll fix that in the next round when we go expand this thing in another year.
Danny, awesome with us as always, man. Always appreciate the insight. Enjoy the games.
Oh, awesome, man. Great being on with you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
You as well. There's Danny Cannell, Bet Online, with us here in D.C. on Grant and Danny. I'm with him. I think this is going to be a smashing success. It's not going away. The question is, what do they do in a couple of years? I think you expand even bigger, potentially.
Yeah.
We've seen that with the NCAA basketball.
I'm with them on the seeding. There's no good way to do it, right? When in the NFL, I know I always compare the two, but there's 32 teams. It's finite. Whereas there's so many dozens of teams that there's no way Boise State could possibly have played like the full SEC schedule, or, you know, Clemson or SMU could have run through Georgia and LSU and Alabama. There's just no way to do that. So you're sort of throwing darts at the wall in terms of seeding, but, you know, there's no perfect solution. But I feel like they could start tweaking that a bit.
I think what they could have done, and certainly what they should have done, in my opinion, is just work back from who's the best team, how do we reward them the most for a dominant regular season. And the best team, I think we all agree, is the Oregon Ducks. They're number one. So
no problem there.
Their first game should be against the winner, say, of wherever you think the softest landing spot is. Let's say it's Indiana, Notre Dame, perhaps. For them to have to play a Ohio State right away, and then maybe a Texas. Like, imagine that path compared to Penn State's first couple of games as the 6th seed.
Yeah.
Where they play SMU in 11, and then they play potentially Boise State.
Boise State.
Like, come on.
That's what I keep pointing out. So one day, I pray, one league, I don't know who it's going to be, if it's college football or somebody else, this is what I would advise for the spring leagues, for example, to get yourself on the map. Go with the old Randy Duye plan. You let the top seed pick their opponent.
I do think that'd be
fun. Can you imagine the theater? Can you imagine the television where you got a representative from every school? They've already discussed it, whatever, and it's like, now with the first pick in the who are you going to match up with draft, you know, the Oregon Ducks, we take, name that team, for whatever reason. We want SMU because we think they're frauds. The theater, the unbelievable instant rivalry that becomes, the fan base is going back and forth with each other, it would be a 10. A 10.
Yesterday, we talked to a D.C. council member. That's when we thought D.C. was getting the land for the RFK site.
How cute.
That didn't happen, by the way. It's not in the bill that's being voted on tonight, which is just a shebangus. But next, we'll talk to a Maryland lawmaker about where we stand and what lies ahead. You're listening to Grant and Danny. We're talking stadium in 2024 like we did in 2023 and 2022 and 2017 and 2011.
2005.
2002.
Remember that?
G&D.
Money Crimes is a podcast all about the dark side of finance and sometimes murder. Find Money Crimes on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Grant and Danny welcoming you back. We are live until 6:30 on The Fan. Thanks for making this Thursday show part of your day. We're going to be at Crystal City Sports Pub tomorrow, just across the river from here in the Navy Yard where we are now and down 395. If you are in the area tomorrow, 4.5 hours previewing the Commanders, the Eagles, talking all things DC sports, getting you ready for a huge college football, pro football weekend, all from the Crystal City Sports Pub. So come on out, enjoy the show, our Friday field trip tomorrow. Cannot wait for that. Right now, though, let's get to the guest hotline where we are joined by Glenn Ivey, who is Maryland's 4th Congressional District member, and he's joining us to discuss the future of a home for the Commanders, whether that's in Maryland or in D.C. So, first of all, Congressman Ivey, thanks for the time. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. So, where do things stand for you? I wonder just your unique perspective there, someone representing Maryland, but also kind of the interests of the country with what's happened here over the last several hours where it looks like D.C. was getting RFK land and now they're not. Just where do you stand as someone from Maryland representing Maryland?
Well, I certainly want to keep the Commanders in Maryland right where they are. We were hoping to be able to build them a new stadium there and do a lot of redevelopment around it. So that's our goal. And, you know, Governor Westmore has been working hard to be able to pull that off. So we'll see how it goes.
So I am a Virginia guy, I should tell you, so I'm not overly familiar. Is the 4th Congressional District near or around the Landover site or no?
Yeah, that's right in the middle of my district. We're the eastern border of Washington, D.C. So it goes up to Laurel. It goes through University of Maryland, FedEx Field, all the way down to MGM.
Harbor. So this is your backyard. So then tell me this. I happen to now be, I think D.C.'s too complicated. It seems like we can't figure this out. If they get the land back, then you start fighting with the city council. So out of convenience, not because I necessarily love the area, I'm on Glenn Ivey's team. I'm going, build me something awesome. Do it out by FedEx. Give me a town center with restaurants and bars and all the stuff you didn't give me near FedEx 1.0 that I was promised years ago. But it seems like this time we can do. My partner here, Danny, says, I don't ever want to go out there. I don't go to the current stadium. I don't want to go to the new stadium. So tell my guy, Danny, why he should be on our side.
Well, he should be on our side because it doesn't look like they're going to get the RFK language passed in the bill. I think what we're hearing right now is it's been stripped out. So I don't know if that's going to happen. But more importantly, I think, you know, we've got a chance to really build a destination that's going to be phenomenal. You know, we've got a new stadium. We've got designs that we've seen about how spectacular that can be. Their development around it can make sense. We can do a lot of great things to build up mixed use, retail oriented, and transit oriented development. We've already got metros there. We've got the new construction by the hospital. We can put the amenities like the restaurants and things nearby. We can make it look pretty much like Nationals Park does now. But we need the help of having the stadium there so we can get the whole thing jump-started.
So, Congressman, isn't the metro still going to be a mile away, kind of no matter how they spin that, or am I missing something?
No, the goal is to move the stadium a little bit southeast from where it is. Mm-hmm. So then it'll be closer to the metro that's there. Then to build an overpass over the Beltway because there's another metro just south of the hospital
right. That
would be even closer. So then you've got two metro stops there that would be actually better than what you've got at the RFK site right now. You'd still have the parking availability and you'd still have great access from the Beltway there, which is actually better than the road access since you've got at the RFK campus. So we've got a lot of advantages. We want to have a chance to build on it.
We're talking about the possibility of FedEx 2.0 with Congressman Glenn Ivey. Of course, it's now Northwest Stadium out there. So without re-legislating, I think there is some skepticism from a lot of people. Like we had a couple callers today that said, you think they're going to do the big town center with the restaurants and the bars. We heard that last time. It never happened. Why didn't it last time and what's different? My answer was, I think you guys have already suggested you'd spend $450, $500 million, whatever the number is, to help build up around the stadium. But for the people like my co-host here who says, they had the chance, they didn't do it, what would be different this time?
Two words, Dan Snyder. He's gone. And now that he's gone, all of that land is owned by the Harris team and those around him. They're people who actually run businesses, built businesses, and made, frankly, billions of dollars, which how they could afford to buy the team to start with. But they believe in trying to build out on the property there. And it's a win-win. It's good for the community, but frankly, it's also good for them because as we build and add things to that area, the value of the land goes up and it puts extra value in the land that they purchase. So we think there's a win-win there for the ownership of the team. There's certainly a win-win there for the community. And when you put the new stadium with the new amenities and everything together, it's also better for the fans and they can have a better experience.
Maryland Congressman Glenn Ivey with us represents the 4th District, which includes the current Northwest Stadium, which, of course, is under the microscope now all of a sudden once again. So did you guys know, I guess I don't know how long you've been in office, Congressman, forgive me, but did you always know that it was Dan Snyder? Like in 2009, did we know that Dan Snyder was Dan Snyder as bad as he was going to be, or in 2004 or 6 or any of those other times when there wasn't a ton of development around there?
I don't think anybody knew how bad Dan Snyder was going to be.
I didn't. I was excited back in 99, sir.
I was too, but I think he's actually been maybe the worst owner in all of professional sports across the board. He was terrible.
Yes.
And now look, this new guy comes in, he brings in the new coach, they bring in the new GM. All of a sudden we got a team that's ready to go, even though they built a team off no rookies that carried over from the previous regime, right? Pretty much everybody's new. We got Jaden Daniels in the draft. It's outstanding. Before the season started, I thought maybe we'd win 5 or 6 games this year. This has been miraculous. I've got kids. I've got 6 kids. The oldest one's like 37. The youngest one's 24. They've never seen Washington have a winning football team that they can recall until now. And so they're geeked up. Now that we've had 30 years in the desert with the Snyder regime, now that we've got a team that can win, let us hang on to it. We can build around it.
Yeah, I'm a tad younger than your oldest, so I can relate to that content. I don't know what it's like. My mom tells me, my dad tells me about this team winning something meaningful, but I'll take their word for that. And, VHS tape, year-long documentary series that we bought when I was a kid. Congressman Glenn Ivey is with us. So give us the idea for the vision. Like, what are we actually talking about? And is the money that you're willing to give the team, is that just for basically the stuff around the stadium, or would there be any money to go toward the actual stadium?
Well, we'll have to see how they do the financing arrangements. Usually that gets hashed out, a little further down the road. And the Harris team hasn't, they need to kind of make a commitment, I think, a little more than what they've done so far before you actually get to the financial piece. But having said that,
there's this whole D.C.
There have been some flirting, sir.
She looks pretty good over there, too. You know what I mean?
Hey, I get it. That's what competition's all about. But, I think the goal would be to have something like, Nationals Baseball Stadium. If you guys lived around here long enough to remember what that looked like, it was incredible. What a change has happened. And it's just maybe 10 years, how fast it's been. You've got other stadium scenarios that are suburban, like Foxborough, what the Patriots have done there. You've got other suburban stadiums, too, that we've been looking at that would be good models. And then from the financing standpoint, we've looked at a variety of those around the country. There's infinite ways to do it. But, the key is to find revenue streams that can help with the team. As far as paying for the construction, that might be parking, that might be bonds. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do this. And make sure we use it more than just the 8 to 10 games. I should say more than 10, right? We have the 2 for the play for the preseason. Got to have some playoff games in there too. But, it's a great place to have Beyonce and those come. And this would be an indoor stadium too. So you could have the Final Four there. I mean, we got real possibilities of what you could do if we do it right, and I think these guys will.
Congressman, I know it's not just Landover within your district. There are other locales as well. Pretty much people have kind of framed this as a choice between the pipe dream of D.C. and its current location. Is there any chance anywhere else in Maryland might be a viable site?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of viable sites in Prince George's County potentially, but, Harris owns the land where it is, so I think from a standpoint of putting a deal together that makes sense for the Harris team, for Prince George's County, for Maryland, and the Commanders, keeping them where they are is probably the best way to go.
One of the sticking points previously between Maryland didn't end up derailing the D.C. deal, obviously. That was someone else's doing. But one of the issues in getting to this point was, what are they going to do with the current stadium? What is that resolution if they end up, because that's in your backyard right there. You can't just have a big hunk of concrete with 70,000 seats. Like, if somehow this thing falls apart tonight, they get the bill tweaked and RFK's back in, what agreement did you come to on that?
Well, they signed an MOU, but, you know, and it's, I call it Plan B. So the idea is that it would be torn down and that, you know, the Harris team would pay for removing, you know, the rubbish that comes from that. But, man, look, we're in this to win this. We think we can get the stadium. We think it's the better venue, and it's actually doable from the standpoint of not just finances but logistics and in the time frame that they need to get it done. So I'm still focused on the win, you know.
So you'd rather have the stadium in Prince George's than the fighter jets?
Yeah, the fighter jets have no link to this. You know, somehow
did you ask for the fighter jets, or is that someone else?
Is like you getting to ride in one a condition of anything?
Yeah. Who wanted the fighter jets? What was that about?
You know, that the Washington Post put those two together, and God bless them. I love the paper, but they aren't connected. But, you know, I think the key here is to make sure that we get all of those things put together. There was a link of some sort with respect to the Key Bridge, but that looks like that's going to be still in the bill and moving forward with the 100% appropriations to cover it. So I think we're good on that front. We'll figure out the fighter jets later.
So, Congressman, my last one, I know you referenced that there's still a lot of TBD in terms of any kind of budget, but, you know, this was a big question that regular folks like Grant and I just had, who don't do this professionally, about D.C.'s ability to come up with a whole bunch of money. Where would the money come from if Maryland does have to start kicking in some funding, whether it's to area around, to the stadium itself, et cetera? Is it something that's budgeted? Is it, as you mentioned, just, you know, fundraising via bonds or otherwise? How would it get paid for, whatever it is?
Well, there's some money that's been set aside by the General Assembly. I think it's around $400 million. Mm-hmm. It's not solely for this. It would be for, you know, construction and development around that location. It's called the Blue Line Corridor. But there's other revenue streams, too. So, for example, if you build parking lots so that you don't have the big concrete asphalt, you know, thing that we've got right now, but you take up some of that, you build the parking lot, you know, people pay to park, you use that revenue stream to cover the construction, and then after that's paid off, then it's a revenue stream that can be used by the team and by, you know, the state or the county to pay off bonds that we might have gotten to cover these expenses. And bonds would be one of those too as well. And then potentially, you know, there are other ways to finance it too. We'd have to see what the Harris team's willing to bring, to bear to get the financing done. But, I mean, he knew he was going to have to build a new stadium when he bought the team. So I would assume that he's prepared to do that. And they're going to have to do it whether it's in D.C. or Maryland. So, you know, I think there's a lot of ways to get it done. The key is just to make a decision that we are going to get it done, to sit down together, you know, whether it's Mr. Harris with Governor Moore or whoever, and commit to moving forward and getting it done as quickly as possible so we can get the new stadium and the team in it by 2030.
That's the goal. I mean, and that's kind of why I came to your side of things, is it seems like we could do it sans a lot of obstacles pretty quickly. I mean, let's just say the thing fails, D.C. doesn't get the land back, Maryland's a winner. How quickly can we get this thing going? Or like me, you, Wes Moore, we grab our shovels, we're out there tonight? What's the deal?
Yeah, I can get a pickaxe and a shovel. I'm 63, though, so I won't be doing a whole lot.
You got a bunch of kids, so I'll meet them out there. How about that?
Yeah, I do have five sons, so I could drag them out and we can get going with you. But seriously, though, I mean, I think, you know, we just have to hash out the deal and get it moving forward quickly. But the upside for us is, you know, everything's pretty much cleared and level to go. And we've got some thoughts about, you know, the infrastructure that would need to be added, but a lot of it's already there. And it's not as old as what's there at, the RFK site. So, you know, we've got the metro sites, we've got the beltway, we've got the parking lot that we can reduce the size of that, put some new development around it, the retail and transit-oriented development stuff, put the new stadium up. We can have this looking good in a few years. We're ready to go.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us. Great information. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
By the way, you got good pipes. If the congressional thing doesn't work out, there's probably a radio gig for you. You sound like a radio guy.
I'd love to come join you guys.
All right. Well,
very cool.
We'll have you chop it up with us sometime in studio. There's Glenn Ivey, congressman in Maryland. React to that. We'll get your thoughts. 800-636-1067. He's rearing to go. What do you make of him making the push? They reached out to us and listening today. I mean, Maryland is pretty clearly feeling good about its chances after things are caving in D.C. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Thanks to Congressman Glenn Ivey for calling in, chopping it up about the Landover, Maryland area and the site where FedEx currently is and where a new stadium might be. I don't think he won you over. Nobody's going to win you over. You're pretty dug in. But he makes a convincing case. Again,
sure, he's a good advocate for his back. He represents that area.
Absolutely.
So it makes sense. Yeah, he knows what he's talking
about. But also, you're not going to go. So,
right.
I mean, he's talking to someone.
Sure.
It's fallen on deaf ears, but you don't go now anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really matter if you go or not necessarily. But before we hit the phones, I'll just dangle in front of you. Awesome restaurants and bars. Brand new Elite Stadium. Amazing Allegiant X. Whatever they're going to call the damn thing. X Stadium. Allegiant Stadium. But it's one of the best in the NFL. You're not interested.
No, not there. Anywhere else is good. There's other spots in Maryland, potentially, that would make sense to me. I don't know that you can build, for example, at National Harbor. I don't know if like the swampy land is too swampy for a stadium.
But none of that's realistic because that's not on the table.
Right. That's the only thing on the table right now is complete unknown in D.C. or Landover. So that's kind of where the debate is. And for me, it's you can't do Landover. I guess that's the end of it.
And your reason for that is?
It's failed. It's already failed. It'll continue to fail.
It's a brand new thing.
Sure, on top of failure. There's a reason they haven't built anything for 25 years. Pretending that it was always Dan Snyder is nonsense. It wasn't. In 2007 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11, there were great moments. 80,000 people a week were still coming. They were still top 3 or 4 in attendance as of 2016 or 17. People were coming over there just for the games. They couldn't build anything sustainable around there. There's a reason for it. The location stinks. You can try to say, well, it'll be slightly southeast of the current stadium. It went from a mile-plus walk to now 80% of a mile walk. It's still not convenient. It doesn't have the same bones that other things.
And he mentioned this, but this came up when we talked about this months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The walk at the Maryland site, if they build at the location that they've talked about, will be less than the walk at the RFK site.
Right, he said south and east, but it's you can't go half a mile south and east. You're basically talking like a lot over. That's all.
I just mean if you metro there, you will end up having potentially a smaller walk at the new site in Maryland.
That is correct.
Than you would at the RFK site.
Yes.
So like the distance to the metro,
At the RFK site. You walk out of the armory and you're in the lot.
That's what he just said. He just said that. That's what they claimed months ago when we had Maryland lawmakers on, is that where they're going to build and where the metro would end up being is closer than the armory site to the RFK site.
I'm extremely dubious of that. I don't see how that could be possible.
I don't know. That's he literally just claimed that.
I thought he said they're moving it south and east slightly.
He did say that.
From the current spot. So unless it's, I don't know. I mean, the current metro spot is, there's no place right next to it to build that would make sense. Maybe there's a different metro that I don't know about.
Well, there are two metros that he referenced. So there are two metro stations. He said it would be closer to both of them. Now, which one is closer by number of steps than the RFK Armory one? That I can't answer. I don't know. But that's what he mentioned. He grabbed the audio if you want on that, Darius. Kendall in Temple Hills, what's up?
What's up, guys?
Hey, man.
So I did not hear Glenn Ivey, but I can imagine he was selling the dream. I was listening to you guys' earlier segment on the Odyssey app. But I agree 1,000%, 1,000,000% with Danny. It is very frustrating as a Prince George's County resident to see minority or black county, most affluent black county in the country. And nothing really is sustainable in the county. Over there, nothing is sustainable. We've seen it. They tore down the Capitol Center. They put up the boulevard. The boulevard was nice for about 10 seconds. Then it's one by one, retailers start moving out. Secondhand mom-and-pop retailers start moving in. Wasn't sustainable. Now it's gone. No real restaurants have been over there for a sustainable period of time, and pretty much all throughout the county. And it's a subject that I think people are tap-dancing around. But if you look at Prince George's County, you don't have any high-end retail, big box, Macy's. Well, you might have a Macy's, but I'm saying like a Bloomingdale's and those type of – you don't have that because I just believe that people – with power don't believe in Prince George's County. And as long as that's the case, people are not going to want to come over, and it's not going to be sustainable. So do I think they can build a state-of-the-art stadium? Yes. Do I think that they could build a town center type where you're talking about, Grant? Yes. Do I think it's sustainable? No. So I don't.
So let me ask you this, though. If they build an indoor stadium, which they will, by the way, and there are, you know, I don't know the number, but 100-some events over the course of the year, you're talking about the NFL season, NCAA tournament games. You're talking about concerts. They could do soccer games there. They could do all kinds of stuff, right? If there's enough events, why couldn't that sustain there?
It sounds good. I wish it could happen. I just don't see it, brother. I think that I just don't want to say what I really want to say, but I'm
if you're comfortable,
the white dollar is not going to be spent over there. And it's not, I'm not saying it from a race. I'm just saying, like folks that retailers and restaurant stuff want to patronize their location, they're not coming to Landover. They'll never come to Landover.
I'm not saying, Danny, like, not anyone's driving to Landover. Like, Danny's not going for a game, okay?
But his point is my point. I'm not going over there on a Wednesday. When you work at Navy Yard, you walk outside and you go to Walters.
Yes.
If you work by Capital One Arena, you walk outside and you go to Clyde's or any of the dozen places. There's nothing over there.
But if they have enough events, is my point, then there's enough foot traffic over there to make it happen, no?
I don't see it, brother. I just think there are bigger things at play here that will never allow it to be a sustainable, long-term venture in Prince George's County, that's so unfortunate, man.
I appreciate your perspective.
You
I mean, that is, if that's true, that is sad. It depends on the number of events. Like, the reason Nats Park works as a baseball venue is there's 81 games, and then they do additional events throughout the offseason, and throughout the entire month of December, they're going to have the, you know, Christmas lights thing. They didn't this year, but they have the last several years. There's always something going on, right? But football doesn't do that. It's a 10-time-a-year thing in a lot of these stadiums. When you build a roof, which they're going to, that can change. And if there's 150 events in 365 days, I think you start to have a different math equation. But I could be completely wrong. It could be a situation where there's only 51 dates, and if that's the case, you're right. There's not people every single day that are going out to eat and doing things over there. And maybe it doesn't work, because we see it to a very small extent here. Danny, the difference on Half Street between the baseball season and the non-baseball season is massive.
It is massive.
And to the businesses, could be catastrophic. And yet, this is a place where a lot of people live. It's a bustling neighborhood. It's a place all the young kids are coming out to party now. And even still, it's night and day from season to non-season. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on Grant and Danny.